Glory to you, O Lord. Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing. This is the gospel of the Lord, the good news. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. Grace and peace to you from the one true God who creates, redeems, and sustains us this morning and always. Amen. As is often the case, our gospel text this morning provides us with ample opportunities for rich discussion of the characters, the cultural dynamics, and theological questions at play in these handful of verses from Luke 13. We could spend hours discussing the nature of the woman's ailment or the role of the ancient view of women, not to mention disabled women and their role in society. We could discuss Jesus' description of her as a daughter of Abraham and what that means, a phrase only used in this instance in Luke's gospel, in this story that is individual only to Luke's gospel. We could talk about the nature of the Sabbath and what it actually means to keep it. But this morning, I don't want to do any of that. This morning, I want to talk about rules. Rules. In this country full of epic stories of the fight for freedom and well-worn tales of rugged individualism and the great triumphs of the self-made man, we love to mythologize. Stories, people, we love to take relatively ordinary occurrences, or maybe just a notch above the usual, and amplify them into legends. George Washington and the cherry tree, for example. Benjamin Franklin's kite and key experiment. We love a good, larger-than-life, amazing tale. We love a good story. And so we add, we embellish, we exaggerate in order to create something larger than life that can, well, live up to the importance it holds over our lives. Our churches are no different. So much of our practices, our traditions, our age-old tales, all those things we think we know about the church and the Bible are often exaggerations, misinterpretations, or quite simply not true. For example, it is extremely unlikely that Mary, the mother of Jesus, ever wore the color blue. Blue was a very hard color to come by in those days. Mary herself was not a wealthy woman, far from it. Right? And there is no biblical evidence that there were 3 wise men. Not only that, we certainly don't know their names. And yet, we've come up with these three wise men, given them names, and created whole stories about who these people were. We have all kinds of ideas, wonderful, epic tales of who we are and what we believe, that we have grown to accept them as truths, when in fact they are grounded in stuff other folks just made up at some point a long time ago. And that's okay. In fact, it's perfectly natural. Scientists have pointed out that our memory, in fact, is incredibly malleable. That in fact, the more we tell a story, recount a memory, relive that memory, well, piece by piece, we add a little bit, elaborate a little more. And the more we do that, the more those elaborations, those additions, become tied to that memory. It's even been said that the most trustworthy memory is the memory of someone who has no more memories. Right? What's the word? An amnesiac, right? They have the most trustworthy memory because they have not told it and retold it and told it and built it out and elaborated and made it longer and more exciting and more interesting. It seems that there is something about our nature as human beings that drives us to elaborate, to add, and to exaggerate the stories that we tell about ourselves, so that these things that we think we remember, these stories that we think that we know, can live as large as the impact that they have had on our lives. We love to mythologize. And among those things we love to mythologize as individuals, as Americans, as faithful churchgoers, are rules. We love to mythologize rules. We love to make rules larger than they are, more necessary than they are. Heck, we even like to make them mean things that they don't. In our gospel text this morning, we see Jesus openly and flagrantly challenging the mythologization of rules. This isn't just another story of Jesus healing someone. This isn't even just another story of a religious authority challenging Jesus' own authority to perform such amazing miracles. No, this is a story about Jesus blatantly breaking the rules in order to point out just how flawed the interpretation and enforcement of those rules have become. To put it another way, Jesus is committing an act of civil disobedience. And like other acts of civil disobedience, Jesus heals this woman, yes, out of compassion, out of holy love, but also to point out the glaringly problematic power dynamics at play within the synagogue and in religious life. This woman, bent low for nearly two decades, would not have been allowed in the synagogue, you see. First, simply because she was a woman, and secondly, because of her disability, she would have been considered to be ritually unclean and therefore unfit to engage with the religious community at large. This means, of course, that Jesus left his teaching in the synagogue and sought this woman out. Remember, unlike other healing stories in our Gospels, Jesus went to her and brought her forward, not the other way around. Jesus goes out of his way, interrupting his teaching. Side note here, from a loving pastor and pastor's kid. Why is teaching okay on the Sabbath, but healing is not? Isn't teaching work? Anyway, Jesus is clearly doing this to cause a stir, to raise a little ire, to provoke a response from the powers that be. And surprise, surprise, just like most examples of direct action of civil disobedience, it works. The indignant leader of the synagogue enters the scene, looking down his nose at Jesus and wagging his little finger to all the onlookers, saying, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, not on the Sabbath day. Why can't you follow the rules? What? Do you think they don't apply to you of all people? Who do you think you are? Have you no respect for how we do things around here?" Jesus responds just as sharply, "You hypocrites. Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the manger and lead it to water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, a Jew, whom Satan has bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" What else is the Sabbath day for, Jesus asks, but to set people free? Free from the bondage of pain and suffering. Free from the relentless rat race of our economic systems, free from the institutions that claim to be for them, but instead seek at every turn to keep them down. What else is the Sabbath day for? We would love, wouldn't we, to align ourselves with Jesus in this story. We would even gladly take our spots in the entire crowd who was rejoicing at all the wonderful things being done by him. But how many times have we stood there complaining about the rule breakers? How many times have we wagged our fingers at those who questioned the validity of the strictures we have put in place? How many of us have said, "Well, I had to do it. I had to follow those rules. Why shouldn't they have to do it too?" How often have we as individuals, we as a collective group of citizens, we as members of this congregation stood together and in the spirit of enforcing the law or keeping order, have stood directly in the face of those seeking liberation, seeking freedom, seeking the full promise of the law, of the land, or the good news of the gospel, and said, only if you do it the right way, the respectable way, our way. Jesus seeks to heal, yes. Jesus seeks to liberate, yes. Jesus calls us to do the same. But first, Jesus pushes us to question these rules we have set up. Jesus pushes us to wonder whether or not we are following God's intention or our own when we stand there, arms crossed, shaking our heads at those who seek to find true liberation and love. Rules can be useful. The law can be a very important instruction as to how we live our lives. But often, in our hands, these set of instructions, these tools, can become some pretty ugly weapons. So today, as we seek to enforce the rules, as we seek to help others lead orderly lives, Let us also remember that a cry for freedom is a cry for freedom. A cry to which we are called to respond with liberation and with love, with good news, whether we like the way that cry sounds or not, whether we like the way it makes us feel or not, whether we think it is agreeable or not. And let us answer that call. Let us reply with the liberating love and abundant mercy to which our God heard our cries. And, well, let the rules be damned. Amen.